building, all of this building, and most of the building behind us, and most of the building down the street. So the institute gets larger and larger. In your care in the infertility section, you will come in contact with probably four different physicians and a nursing staff that right now has seven nurses on it, and hopefully we'll have some more new personnel within the next several, I would say weeks. We're hoping for weeks, but it'll probably be months. So you'll come in contact with a lot of different people when you come in through cycle. Dr. Schulman, of course, is the founder, and several of you have met him when you came through for consultation. Dr. Carolyn Coulomb, who is a reproductive endocrinologist and an expert in recurrent miscarriage, recurrent pregnancy loss. Dr. Michael Upsall, who joined us almost 7 weeks ago now from the Navy, who had actually been working here with us for the course of the last 6 years doing different projects and different kinds of research with us. So while he's new to our staff, he's not new to what we do here. And then Dr. Susan Black, who is actually one of our pediatric geneticists, who works primarily on the first floor next door, but who also does retrievals and embryo transfers for us several times a week. So you'll meet all four of those different physicians. The physician who will be doing your care on a day-to-day basis depends on who is on that day. There is one physician assigned on a daily basis to do monitoring. And because we do this 7 days a week, the physician that you saw in your preliminary consultation may not be in the building or may not be working on the day that you come in or have questions. If you have something that you need to address for a specific physician, you can feel free to leave a message for that one person with the understanding that it may take you a day or two to get a response back from an individual physician. If you have questions about how your cycle is going, what's happening with monitoring, how you're progressing, or things like that, however, there is a physician here every morning during morning monitoring. I won't say they're here at 7:30 bright and early ready to meet you, but they are here by 8:15 every morning to answer patient questions, go over your chart, and talk to you when you're in cycle. We do manage patients as a team in the infertility unit, among the nurses as well as among the physicians. So if you call in and leave a message for a specific nurse, it may be that she worked this weekend and will be off a day or two in the middle of the week, and your response to your message may be delayed if the message is left specifically on her desk. If you need to talk to one person in particular, that's fine, and we'll answer you as soon as we can. If it's something that anyone in the office can look at your chart and answer your question, please feel free to talk to any one of the nurses who answers the phone, and they'll try to help you out with getting whatever information you need to have. When you're in cycle, patients are welcome to call straight into the nursing office, and I will give you that phone number so that you can do that and ask those questions. When patients are not in cycle, we ask them to call into the telephone office so that we can deal with them on a regular basis when the messages come down. As I said, we've been here 10 years and have expanded from a staff of 5 individuals to currently a staff of 240 individuals. There are a lot of people and a lot of things that go on behind your actual cycle and what's occurring with your cycle. Between the sonography department, the labs, the embryologists, Dr. Sharon's, and the andrology department, all have a different role to play in your care. And very obviously, questions do come up about what's going on or what specifically you need to do next, and we'll try to answer those for you as best we can. It's my understanding from looking at my attendance roster that everyone here tonight is doing an IVF cycle. Is that correct? Okay. Because we also do ovulation induction cycles, which means taking the same type of medications that you take for the IVF cycle, but taking them in a little bit different series of days of medication and a little bit different dosage of medication, with the outcome being, instead of an egg retrieval for an IVF cycle, either intrauterine insemination or having timed coitus at home to try to achieve pregnancy that way. So there are a variety of different things we do, but since most of you are focused on IVF, we will go through that first, and then if you have questions about ovulation induction or something else, we can answer those as well later on. Please feel free to ask questions as we go through the discussion tonight. I'm just keeping an eye out for those other four people who still are driving down the highway somewhere in the neighborhood. The reason that you're asked to come to class is because you're all going to be using injectable medications to hopefully create a larger number of eggs or follicles than you would in your given menstrual cycle. Most women in their cycle produce one egg at a time, ovulate that one egg, and it has a 25% chance of fertilizing and implanting in the uterine cavity. When you do an IVF cycle or an ovulation induction cycle, hopefully you'll produce 10 or 15 or even 20 eggs. Those eggs will be retrieved in a procedure called the egg retrieval, transvaginal ultrasound guided egg retrieval, and hopefully fertilized in the lab and transferred back to the uterus a couple of days later. When you've been through the main building and in the waiting room downstairs, you've seen a number on the wall. I think right now it's like 774. And that's the number of IVF pregnancies that we've created here at the Institute, including fresh embryo transfers and frozen embryo transfers. It doesn't accurately reflect the number of babies born. It's about 520 at this point. And some of that are from multiple pregnancies and some of that are from single pregnancies. We hope that you'll all be able to add to that number. As you know, if you've been around for a while or reading through the literature that Dr. Shulman keeps in the waiting areas, the record number right now of pregnancies from one IVF cycle is actually 4. We do have a couple who did a cycle several years ago. They produced a large number of embryos. On the first fresh transfer cycle, they took back 3 or 4 embryos and did have a pregnancy occur, but it ended in a spontaneous miscarriage. On the second cycle, which was done as a frozen embryo transfer cycle, which I'll talk about more a little bit later on, they had a little girl. On the third transfer, taking back also frozen embryos, they had a second little girl. And on their fourth embryo transfer cycle, which they did last January, they took back they took back 4 more of their embryos. They still have 3 remaining in storage, and they had a little boy in September. So it is very possible to do one IVF cycle, produce a fair number of embryos, and over the course of several years, take them back and achieve one whole family out of one IVF cycle. So hopefully that's what everybody here will be able to do, and we'll have baseball teams. Okay. The cycle actually starts 7 days after ovulation occurs for the IVF cycle. We assess the time of ovulation by having you purchase an ovulation predictor kit from the drugstore. And we don't recommend any specific kit. Some patients have used one in the past and it's worked fine for them. Some patients have used a different kit and it works fine for them. My recommendation is that when you're reading through the directions on the kit, you purchase one where the color change is to a blue color rather than the pink color. A lot of patients have said it's much easier to differentiate the shades of blue than it is the shades of pink, and the variation is much more intense in the blue kit. If you're used to using either an ovulation predictor kit or doing your basal body temperature charting, or if you know your body well and you know when ovulation occurs, you can use any one of those 3 methods to determine the timing for coming in for preliminary blood work. It will be, as I said, 7 days after ovulation occurs. And if you're using one of the ovulation predictor kits, it usually has the brightest color change about 24 hours before ovulation actually occurs. So if you had a color change this morning, it would mean ovulation would very likely be occurring tomorrow, and you could actually come in next Wednesday for your 7 days after ovulation blood work. This is a somewhat arbitrary start time for the cycle. There's nothing written in stone about being here exactly 7 days afterward. If it turns out that that's supposed to be your weekend away at your family reunion or something like that, you can come in a day early or you can come in a day late. What we will do at that point is use blood work to determine where you actually are in cycle and the appropriateness of your starting medication at that point. I apologize to you, but I have a real bad sinus problem tonight, so I'm going to have to keep drinking in order to keep talking. If you've been around nursing this weekend, you know that I think 3 out of 6 people right now have laryngitis, and it's sort of like listening to frogs croak upstairs, and I'm trying to avoid the group. On the day that you come in for preliminary blood work, if it's a weekday, our doors open at 7 a.m. If it's a weekend, our doors open at 7:30 a.m. If you need to be somewhere in a timely fashion in the morning, it's a good idea to get here between probably 6:50 and 7 o'clock to be one of the first people to sign in on weekday mornings. We have a very large population of patients at the current time. We can see anywhere from 25 to 45 to 50 patients on a given morning, and we don't have any way of controlling the number of patients that we're seeing. A lot of programs control the number of cycles they'll do at a time, and they limit it to 20 patients, and they can plan on never seeing more than that number of patients on a morning. We've never limited cycles, and so we can see anywhere, as I said, 40, 45 patients is not unusual. If you have to be out of here quickly, it's a good idea to begin and sign in as one of the first people on the list in the morning. Morning monitoring is done on a walk-in basis. It's done on a first-come, first-served basis. And what will happen is you go to the front desk on the first floor, you'll sign in there, they'll ask you for your name, they'll ask you what day it is in your cycle, they'll ask you what type of cycle you're doing, whether it's an IVF cycle, an ovulation induction cycle, or at some point in the future, a frozen embryo transfer cycle. They'll ask you for insurance information, and we may ask you for your date of birth or your phone number, somewhat depending on the day of the week it is. On weekends in the nursing office, we're usually asking for your phone number so that we can know where to reach you in the afternoon to get instructions back to you. Once you sign in, you'll be asked to have a seat in the reception area waiting for 7:30. And at 7:30, we'll start actually seeing patients on the second floor. The nursing staff to do blood work and the sonography staff to do the sonograms that are required for you. What will happen is you'll be called on an individual basis to come back into the blood drawing room, get your blood drawn. If it's the day when you're supposed to begin medication, for instance, pre-Lupron day, one of the nurses will take you into the nursing office, give you your medications, have you sign a medication log for receiving the medications, and go over how Lupron is drawn up from the bottle and how it's injected. And then after that blood drawn, initial pre-Lupron day, you're free to go. It only takes usually about 15 to 20 minutes on pre-Lupron morning. That's one of the quickest in and outs you'll get through the cycle. On that day, when we get the blood work back in the afternoon, we get back all the series of blood work from the laboratory. We chart them in your particular chart, and then the physician sits down to review them. That process takes us generally until about 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And what we're looking for on pre-Lupron day is an estradiol level between 100 and 200, a progesterone level between 10 and 15, and an LH or luteinizing hormone level of less than 10. If we see all of those levels, what they indicate to us is that you probably have ovulated on your cycle, and you're probably about a week past the point of ovulation, and that you are in an appropriate state to start the Lupron portion of the cycle. For those who haven't cycled yet, this is what the Lupron kit that you'll receive looks like. If you've cycled in the past, you probably had a Lupron kit that was a great big flat box that was blue and white, and it was a really nice box that was really ecologically incorrect, so they come up with a much smaller, compact kit of medications for you. And what we have in here is a guide of how to draw up and mix the medication. It has syringes for your use for the cycle, and it also has a box of medication with the Lupron itself in it. When you receive your Lupron and open it up and take it out the first time, you're going to notice that the bottle looks like it's half empty. You have to be optimistic. This bottle is really half full, and it'll last you from 14 to 21 days of a normal cycle. Okay? It looks like a very small amount of medication, and what often happens is patients will take their bottle home without ever noticing how it looks. And the next morning, they take their first shot out of it and call back and say, I used half the bottle already. It's already gone. Something's wrong with it. So when you open it up the first time, it already looks half empty, but it does last a long time. Lupron is used to suppress your naturally occurring hormones, the ones that your body would be making on a regular basis trying to get you ready for another ovulatory cycle. It suppresses activity in the pituitary and the hypothalamic glands in your brain, and it keeps your body from producing follicle-stimulating hormone. And what it does is it keeps your body from competing with us when we actually give you medications and hormones in the form of injection later on. It also prevents you from having later on in the cycle what's called an ovulatory surge, where your body, in response to your estrogen level, would get an indication that it was time for ovulation to occur. And obviously in a cycle where we're contemplating doing an egg retrieval, we don't want ovulation to occur 1 second before we're ready for it to occur. So we use Lupron to control that. When you look through the brochure of information that comes with the Lupron, and I've also given you one in your handouts tonight, all the pictures in here are of a fairly hairy gentleman drawing up Lupron and getting ready to inject it into his leg. And a lot of our patients will also say, I think you've given me the wrong drug. This has no relation to me at all. What it was invented for was to control the production of hormones in men who had prostatic cancers. And it's been adapted to the use for women in infertility of controlling your hormone surges as well. So everything is really appropriate to you except for the pictures. Okay? And it is a very valuable medication for IVF people and for infertility people who've been in it for a long time. It says, we used to do retrievals at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, depending on your LH surge. It's also a valuable medication for you because our patients used to have to check every 4 hours around the clock for an LH surge using one of those urinary predictor kits. So it's really much easier and much nicer to have it controlled by the Lupron a little bit, and it gives you the ability to sleep through the night, and it keeps us from doing retrievals at 4 o'clock in the morning very often. If your hormone levels are appropriate when you come in on pre-Lupron day, you'll actually begin the Lupron the next morning, and that's called Lupron day one. Once you start the Lupron medication, your entire cycle is counted off in Lupron days. So when you come in and sign in the morning, you'll see L10, L12, L28 sometimes, different numbers of days on the Lupron cycle. But that is how we measure out what's happening in your cycle. So you don't have to keep track if it's Lupron day 10, it's the third day of my menstrual cycle, and it's the second day I'm taking Metrogen. We use everything based on the Lupron calendar once you get started. And you'll be taking the Lupron at a dose of 0.2 milliliters, which is a really small dose, on a daily basis for the first 7 days. You then come back to the clinic to see us on Lupron day 7. And on this day, you're coming in for blood work and for a sonogram. If you've done infertility work in the past, you probably had full bladder sonograms and known that it was very uncomfortable and very difficult to maintain the fullness of your bladder while you sat in a waiting room and waited to have a sonogram done. We now do all of our sonograms transvaginally, so you don't have to worry about that anymore. Your bladder needs to be empty now for sonograms rather than full. And what we're looking for on Lupron day 7 is an estradiol level that's less than 30, it's very low, progesterone level of 1 or less than 1, an LH level of less than 10. And that indicates that the Lupron, in fact, has suppressed your own cycle. It also probably indicates that your menstrual period either has just started or is getting ready to start if your hormone levels are at these low a level. We also do the sonogram that day to make sure that there are no ovarian cysts that would complicate the cycle or would interfere with your response to medication. Most patients don't have any kind of cysts, and it's not a problem at all. If they do note some type of cyst when you come in for the Lupron day 7 sonogram, if it's very large in size, the physician may recommend that we either, one, keep you on an additional week of Lupron and try to make the cyst get smaller on its own as your hormone levels go down, or they may recommend draining that cyst, and we do that by making you very comfortable putting you to sleep and going ahead and draining that small cyst that might be there so that it doesn't complicate the cycle. If your hormone levels are appropriate and they're at this level, you'll receive your first in a series of brown paper bags of medication. And what your bag will have on it is the nursing number. It'll say Lupron day 7. I don't have a video diagram of this. It has a nursing number, and it'll say Lupron day 7, which is the day you're in for blood work and sonogram. You took 0.2 milliliters of Lupron that morning. And if your hormone levels are appropriate, you'd be starting Metrogen that night at the dose of 2 ampules per night. And your bag will have all of those instructions written on it, just like they're written up here. It'll have the phone number on it, and it'll have all of your supplies for the cycle. Metrogen, lots of needles and syringes, and another medication called HCG, and they all come in here. We used to use a printed sheet of paper that gave you all your instructions. And what happened was everybody would take their sheet of instructions with them into the office, and they would diligently call us at 2 o'clock in the afternoon for instructions of what to take that night and how to get started, and that would be great. And then at 7 or 8 o'clock that night when they went to do the shot, that sheet of paper was still in the office right by the phone where it had been all day. So the only way you can lose is if somebody takes it for lunch. Okay, all of your instructions are going to be right here on your bag and very convenient for you. Okay. If everything is normal in cycle, you start the medication that night, and you'll continue the Lupron at a dose that will decrease a little bit in order to allow your body to respond to the Metrogen, and you'll also be taking the Metrogen at a dose of 2 ampules per night. You'll do that for 4 nights and come back and see us for blood work on Lupron day 11, or after you've taken 4 nights of the medication. If when you come in on Lupron day 7, your hormone levels are not low enough to begin medication, you may be asked to stay on the Lupron for an additional week. And that happens currently in about 40 to 50% of patients, where their hormone levels just are not quite low enough after 1 week of Lupron for them to go on to the Metrodin. And our current policy is that they continue then for another week of the Lupron. Don't worry about it if you have to continue the Lupron an extra week. It doesn't change the outcome of the cycle. It doesn't make it worse or better than anybody else's cycle. They turned out to be very well-managed cycles. It's just that some people don't down-regulate their hormones quite as rapidly as others do.
What's the purpose of the Metrodin?
Metrodin is follicle-stimulating hormone. Remember, we've shut down your system so that you're not producing follicle-stimulating hormone, or ovaries not producing it. But the ovary has to have something to respond to, so we use injected follicle-stimulating hormone in order to increase the number of follicles that you're going to produce in a given month. Once you return to the clinic on Lupron day 11 for blood work, if your estrogen level is up over 100 by this time, and that's the anticipated range where it will be, you'll continue on 2 ampules a night for a couple of additional days, and then come back on Lupron day 13 for blood work and sonogram to see what your response has been. There are a fair number of patients who don't respond really well to just 2 ampules of Metrodin per night. And some patients actually need to increase their dosage of Metrodin. So when you come on Lupron day 11, if your hormone level is not quite as high as we'd like to see it, you may be asked to increase the dosage to 3 ampules per night for a couple of nights, and then come back again for blood work to see if you're responding at that level. In IVF programs in the past, everybody used to start out at 3 or 4 or even 5 ampules of Metrodin or Progranol a day, thinking that the larger doses would recruit a large number of follicles, and patients would just have a better response to that. In November, Dr. Schulman and a large portion of the staff went to Belgium to Dr. von Sturtigen's clinic at Brussels Clinic, and they do a large number of IVF cycles, and they have the world's largest experience with sperm injection techniques. And what we found was that they do their cycles beginning with 2 amps of Metrodin a day. They do it for a longer period of time. We used to do 3 amps for 8 days. Now we're doing 2 amps for probably 12 days. And we get a larger number of follicles to be recruited, and we get a larger number of even follicles at the time of the egg retrieval. So we've gone back here also to doing the lower dosage, and we start most of our patients on the lower dosage, unless you've had something in previous experience or past experience where you just didn't respond to those kind of dosages of medication. Okay, so you may have friends or know people who've gone through cycles who started at much higher doses of medication, but what we found is the lower and slower recruitment seems to work better and give us a better group of eggs. As I said a moment ago, the number of days of cycle is currently running right around 12 days of Metrodin for most of our patients, but it's on a very individual basis. What will happen daily when your blood work and sonograms are reviewed by the physician is we'll see where your hormone levels are, how your hormone levels look in comparison to what we're seeing on the sonogram picture, and there may be a great deal of fluctuation in the dosage of the medication that you'll take on a given day. You may have been taking 3 amps for several days and then show a really good response, and we may actually back your medication off to 2 ampules to gradually continue to develop follicles rather than keeping it at a higher dose to really create your high estrogen level. So what you need to be aware of is that they're going to be managed on an individual basis, and it's not just a rubber stamp that, you know, well, if it looks like this today, you get this or that. They're all managed individually for you. What we're looking for toward the end of the cycle, after usually about 12 days of medication, are follicles that are about 18 to 20 millimeters in size, and an estrogen level that goes along with each one of those follicles, the estrogen being 150 to 200 for each follicle. So if you have a sonogram picture with 5 follicles on it and your estrogen level is 1,000, that's great. If you have an estrogen level of 200 with 5 good-sized follicles, we would have some concern about the quality of eggs that we're going to retrieve from those follicles, or the fact that there may not be a follicle or an egg in every follicle that's developing on the sonogram picture. For those of you who haven't had sonograms done for follicular monitoring, this is a very rough picture of what they're going to look like over the course of the cycle. The dark areas are actually the follicles. They look like little dark black circles. And the area between them, the white, actually toward the end of cycle begins to look a little bit like Swiss cheese. There are all kinds of little black holes and all kinds of white interfaces between them. What will happen on a daily basis is you have your sonograms done. There is a monitor there for your use for, so that you can look and see what's going on during the course of the sonogram. And you'll become very adept at measuring and seeing how big your follicles are and how big they're getting. And most of our patients become very adept also at helping the sonographers make sure that they've measured each and every one of those follicles and which one is which. When you have your sonogram, follicles are not round, perfect, symmetrical circles. They can be oblong, they can be triangular, they can be square. It says nothing about the quality of the egg inside or the fact that you're going to have long, skinny children or short, fat children. It doesn't say anything about any of that. But follicles develop at very different rates, and they develop, if a large number of them are developing in one ovary, some of them are going to be more squashed than others are. And what happens is when the sonographers do your scans, they're looking at cross sections of the ovary at different levels, and your ovary is actually a round ball, it's not a flat surface, but we have to take flat cut pictures of it. So these follicles sometimes look really strange, but they're fine, and the eggs within them are usually just fine also. When we know that the follicle size is appropriate, as I said a moment ago, 18 to 20 millimeters in size, and that most of the follicles in the ovaries are at about that size range or very close to that size range, you'll be asked to take another medication in the cycle. And this medication is called HCG, or human chorionic gonadotropin. And what it does is it helps to mature the eggs and the follicles, and it helps to get the follicle ready for the actual egg retrieval process. This medication is given 34 hours prior to the time of the retrieval. Our retrievals here are usually done in the morning hours. They're done between 10 and noon. And so we ask you to take your injections of HCG usually between midnight and 2 a.m. The timing of the injection is fairly critical because it does cause ovulation to occur 36 hours after injection. If the timing gets messed up and the retrieval gets delayed for some reason, the potential for ovulation to occur before the retrieval occurred would exist. So we're very careful about when we ask you to take the medication, and also very careful to try to do our retrievals in as timely a fashion as we can. On the day that you're told to take the HCG injection, you'll be given the time to take it. You'll be told that you're going to come in the next day once more for blood work and sonogram. And you're also going to do 3 betadine douches that day. A lot of people have never done douching, and betadine douches with an iodine solution. What we have you do it for is to clean the vaginal canal in anticipation of having the retrieval done. The vaginal canal is never going to be a sterile area, and eggs don't like antiseptic solutions like you would use in the operating room to clean off the skin surface. So we have you use the betadine the day before the retrieval to make the environment as clean as we can. And then on the actual day of the retrieval, we use a buffered saline solution in order to clean the vaginal canal and the cervix at that time. But the betadine helps to get things ready for us. On the day of the actual retrieval, you'll be told to come in to the clinic about 1 hour and 15 minutes prior to the time that you're scheduled for the retrieval. And in the course of that time, there will be several things that will occur. One, we ask that you have a very light breakfast on the morning of egg retrieval. We don't use anesthesia, and we don't have to worry about people getting sick and aspirating and throwing up and swallowing anything like that, because we only use sedation for retrieval and not anesthesia. But it makes patients more comfortable just to have a little bit of light toast or an English muffin or something like that, and maybe a cup of tea very early in the morning, and then not have anything else to eat until after retrieval's been accomplished. The preparation for the retrieval starts, as I said, about an hour and 15 minutes before the retrieval time itself. We get you comfortable in a couple of gowns. We have the world's most beautiful negligee sets next door. Actually, 2 patient gowns, one frontward and one backward, but they are very functional. And we'll be glad to tell your husband if that's what you want for your next birthday or Valentine's Day. And we start to get you ready for retrieval by giving you a series of medications. The first injection, again, is atropine, and that's an injection to help dry up the creases in your nose and mouth. Very often when you're on the retrieval table, the physician may tilt the table so that your head is a little bit lower than your legs. And if you have any kind of secretions in your throat, it tends to sit there and make you feel just a little bit uncomfortable having something there that really is hard to clear when your head is tilted down very low. So we use atropine to dry up those secretions. What it'll do is cause you to feel like you have a cottony mouth, and it'll make you feel very thirsty. You are allowed to have sips of water right up until the time of the retrieval, and after the retrieval's over with, you can eat and drink as you choose. We also give you Phenergan. Phenergan is going to prevent you from being nauseated in response to either the retrieval itself, anxiety or nervousness about the retrieval, or the medications that we use to make you nice and sleepy for the retrieval itself. So you'll get the atropine and Phenergan in the form of an injection. We also give you an injection of Versed. Versed is a member of the Valium family. And this is probably the kindest drug that there is in the whole course of retrieval. It tends to make you very relaxed, and it also tends to cause a little bit of short-term memory loss from the time that it's injected through the course of the retrieval. It's a nice benefit because you get very relaxed, you go through the retrieval without any problem, and you really don't remember too much about what went on in the retrieval. We also give you, we do all those medications while you're in the recovery room, and we have you stay there for about 45 minutes, allowing the medications to work and make you real comfortable before the retrieval. Most of the time, we have to wake you up from the recovery couch where you're resting and get you to walk into the retrieval room. And some of our patients are a little bit more sleepy than others when we start to go do the retrieval. But these medications do make you comfortable, and that's the point of using them. Once we go into the retrieval room, we give you two more medications. We give you morphine in the form of an IV to take the edge off of any pain or discomfort that you would feel in the retrieval itself. And we give you a little bit more Versed, and this time it's also an IV form. And what it does is tends to make you snore right through the retrieval. Most patients have no recollection at all of feeling anything during retrieval. Most patients don't feel anything during retrieval. You are arousable. You will talk to us if we ask you to, but you really aren't with the program as far as knowing exactly what's going on during the course of the retrieval itself. We give you the medications in kind of a basic dose that almost all patients get unless they have some type of problem with receiving medications and we have to alter it for allergies or something like that. And then we titrate the amount of medication that you get based on your response to the drugs. If we've given you all of your pre-medication and we've given you the morphine and we've given you the Versed and you're still sitting up and talking, you're going to get a little bit more medication. If, on the other hand, we've given you the two preoperative medications in the recovery room, and we've had to carry you from the couch to the retrieval room, you're going to get a much smaller dosage of medication. But the point of all the drugs is to make you comfortable for the process of the retrieval. You shouldn't feel anything. When we do the retrieval, they're done with a transvaginal ultrasound, which you'll all be very used to by that time, and the ultrasound probe actually has a needle guide that fits along it. And what happens is the physician will take the ultrasound probe and visualize on the screen exactly where your ovaries are, and these would be the ovaries. And then they go through the vaginal canal and through the back of the vaginal wall with the needle into each one of the ovaries. The part that people usually would respond to would be going through the vaginal wall and directly into the ovary. The medications pretty much prevent you from feeling or knowing that that's occurring, and it keeps you nice and still on the table. The physician, once they've gone through the vaginal wall one time and into the ovary, they can get all the follicles from one penetration into the ovary. We'll empty all the follicles on one ovary, hand the tubes with the eggs in them, hopefully, back to the lab, and the embryologist look for the eggs on an ongoing basis while we're doing the retrieval. After they've looked through all of one side, they may take the needle back out, reposition it, and go to the other ovary, and do the exact same process on that side, and empty all the follicles on that side. Usually by the time we get you back to the recovery room, the embryologist can tell us how many eggs there are, what the quality of the eggs is. If you're going to be doing one of the sperm injection techniques, they can tell us at that point how many eggs they're going to be able to do that with, how many are mature and ready for that procedure to be done. And we know all that in a very short period of time. What happens is, though, your wife will be laying there, and she'll wake up about 20 or 30 minutes later, and she'll say, well, how many eggs were there? And you'll say, there were 15, they're going to do ICSI or whatever with 12 of the eggs, they really look good. And she'll say, oh, that's great. 5 minutes later, she'll say, but how many eggs were there? Mm-hmm. Say, there were 15, and they're going to do a C with 12. And 5 minutes later, she asks you the same question, and pretty soon you're holding up a piece of paper going, 15, 12, you know, because the same question gets fairly redundant. But that is a function of the medication. It's not a function that your wife is losing her mind or she can't remember anything. It's just a function of the versa. And it is a short-term action. Okay, it only lasts for a couple of hours, but it does occur. So you need to be aware of it. And on the evening of retrieval or the afternoon of retrieval, when you go home, it's a good idea to have somebody around. Just because what can happen is you put on the teapot to make a pot of tea for yourself, and then go back and sit down and watch Oprah or something and totally forget that you have a teapot on until it boils dry. Or we had another patient who went up to the cash flow machine on the corner and managed to remember her PIN number, her identification number, because that's in your long-term memory, but doesn't quite know what she did with the money. So it is important to have somebody with you. We also want you to get home to the proper address if you need somebody to drive you at that point. Okay? We've never had a terrible event or occurrence for anybody who's had Versed other than the lady who doesn't really know what she did with the money. Also in that light, once you wake up from retrieval, most of our patients are fairly hungry because they had a very, very small existent breakfast in the morning. And they're going to be hungry for something for lunch or for dinner. And you have two options here. You can take her to McDonald's and tell her you took her out for a wonderful dinner. And she really won't be able to argue with that because she won't know for sure. Or you can take her out to someplace just wonderful and get no credit at all because she won't remember it worth it on. Okay. It usually takes patients about 2 hours to recover from retrieval itself. And while you're recovering, you can have water to drink. We have a refrigerator in the recovery room that has juice boxes in it. You're welcome to have those. Or sodas or whatever you'd like to have. Once you're awake and with it enough to get dressed and go on home, you can do that. So understand that you probably are going to be kind of sleepy and kind of in and out of it for most of the rest of the day. It's not a day where you should plan, okay, my appointment calendar says I have retrieval from 8:45 till 10:30. I'm recovered by 12:30. I'm going to be back at my desk at 1 o'clock. You might be there, but you're not going to be worth anything to anybody. Okay? So don't plan your day around retrieval time thinking that you're going to go back and do something really productive that afternoon. Okay? It's just important for patients to know that because we always have somebody who's struggling to get back into their suit to go back to work. And if they can't get their blouse on frontward, they really probably can't go back to work. On the evening of retrievals, we have you start also taking an antibiotic. Because we've gone through the vaginal wall and it can't ever be a sterile environment, we do use the antibiotic tetracycline to make sure that no infection gets transferred when we go through the vaginal wall. You'll take it for a small number of doses. It's a total of 10 doses. It starts an hour before dinner, one at bedtime, and then four the next day, an hour before meals, and one at bedtime, and four on the actual day of embryo transfer. And what that does is just make sure that no infection got transmitted from the vaginal canal into the ovary or into the pelvic area. We want to avoid that. Also, on the day after the retrieval, you're welcome to call us, and we can tell you usually by about noontime what kind of embryos have been created. When we talk about embryos on the day after retrieval, what the embryologist is looking for is proof of fertilization having occurred. And what they're usually seeing is embryos that are what's called a 2-pronuclear or 2PN stage. That means that yes, the sperm has penetrated the egg, and there is a nucleus at each end of the cell, and the cell is probably getting ready to divide, which is what's appropriate for embryos to look like at that stage. We only look at our embryos one time in the day. We don't take them in and out of the incubator. They don't like light. They don't like heat changes or temperature changes. And so we don't keep going back and looking at them. So when we talk to you at noon and tell you that there are maybe, if you had 10 eggs and there are 7 embryos or 7 that show signs of fertilization, if those other eggs were mature and healthy, it doesn't mean that on the next day there won't be an additional embryo or two. It just means that at the time that the embryologist looked, on the day after retrieval, they saw signs of fertilization in a given number of eggs. There have been two different schools of thought. One was that we wouldn't tell you anything about fertilization until 2 days afterwards when the information was more accurate. But most patients want to have an inkling at least that something is happening right on the day after they're retrieved. So don't panic if it's only 3 or 4 embryos and you're expecting to have 8 or 10. The next day, there may very well be additional embryos, but we just don't take them in and out to keep looking at them. Okay? Also, on the day after the retrieval is done, you're going to start on some progesterone support. In your normal cycle, when ovulation occurs, if this were a follicle, the follicle would open, the egg would be released, and the follicle would reclose. And it might be a little bit misshapen, but it really keeps all the fluid in it. And that fluid produces estrogen and progesterone to support an early pregnancy. And that follicle, one day it's a follicle, the next day we call it a corpus luteal cyst, and it supports the pregnancy after the egg has been released. When we do IVF and put a needle into the follicle and drain out all the fluid, and then we put sterile solution back into the follicle to wash it to make sure that the egg has been released from the follicle, we leave it pretty much depleted of the fluid that would make estrogen and progesterone to support early pregnancy. The body and the ovary still produce large amounts of estrogen, and we don't need excess of that, but they don't produce very much progesterone without that follicular fluid there. And in order to support a large number of, hopefully, embryos being transferred back to your body, you need to have some additional progesterone support to do that. We have it available in 2 forms. The first form is by injection. It's 1 cc of progesterone per day, and it's taken in the evening hours. And at this point, when you haven't even hardly gotten started on the shots at all, it's like shots, forget that. It's taken 1 time a day. We also have an oral form of progesterone that you're welcome to take as well. It comes in a capsule the pharmacy makes for us, but they have to be taken every 6 hours around the clock. So if you decide to take the oral form of progesterone, we have that and we'll provide it to you, but you have to remember that it's taken every 6 hours around the clock. Okay, so it's like a 12-6 or 10-4 schedule. Take it on. The day of embryo transfer, you come in, you get your instructions as to how full your bladder needs to be, and that depends on the position of your uterus. Almost every woman has been told at some point that their uterus is tilted. Well, it's either tilted forward or back or to one side or the other, and that's true of 100% of people. There's nobody who's perfectly midline and everything. Your uterus and your bladder lie right next to each other. Your bladder lies in front of the uterus, and the uterus usually curves over the bladder. If your uterus does, in fact, tilt forward like this, this is a fairly sharp turn for the physician to make with a catheter to get into your uterus. So we may ask you to fill your bladder to straighten out that canal a little bit. Okay, and we'll tell you, based on your pelvic exam when you saw the physician or the sounding or on your sonograms, how full your bladder needs to be. If we say it needs to be very full and we're going to do the transfer with sonogram, it's going to mean drinking probably 6 8-ounce glasses of fluid and coming in feeling pretty miserable with your bladder being really full for the transfer. If we say it needs to be partially full, you probably drink 2 to 3 glasses worth just to straighten out that canal, just a little bit. Or if you're lucky and your uterus tilts toward the back, your bladder in the front doesn't make much difference at all and you won't have to have a full bladder at all. But you'll be given specific instructions for how you need to come prepared for your transfer. You'll also be told to take some Anaprox, which is a muscle relaxant pill, and we give you 2 of those an hour before the transfer is going to occur, and then 2 more about 10 minutes before the transfer is going to occur, so that you don't have cramping when we do the actual embryo transfer. And we'll also give you or offer you a shot of Versed. And once again, this is the member of the Valium family. And what it does is makes it easier for you to go home after the transfer and not do anything. Or watch Ricky Lake and Oprah and everybody else who's on TV and not care. Okay?
Do you forget the muscle?
Pardon?
Do you forget the muscle?
Not really.
Too bad.
Not really. The loss of memory occurs much more with the IV medication than it does with just the IM injection. But, you know, it makes it just easier for you to not worry about everything else the rest of the afternoon, because so many of us are so busy that taking off from 10 o'clock the day of the transfer until the next morning and not doing anything is virtually impossible. And that's what we'd like you to do, is not do anything. Just go home, lay on the couch, veg out, go to bed, and just stay kind of quiet and calm and peaceful until the next morning. Gives the embryos a little bit better chance. So you go home and rest until the next day. The progesterone continues through the pregnancy test, which is 11 days after embryo transfer. And at that point, you have what's called a quantitative beta-HCG level drawn. That's the pregnancy test, and the level will tell us if it's done here at our clinic, the level will be if it's less than 5, it's negative. If it's greater than 5, it's positive, and we'll tell you what the number is and how positive that means things are at that point. If it's positive, we repeat the blood test 2 days afterward to make sure that the levels are going in the appropriate direction. It should double virtually in 2 days. And we'll offer you a series of early gestational sonograms at that point. Now, a lot of you probably had friends who've been pregnant, and in about 20 weeks of pregnancy, they had a sonogram done. It told them whether it was a boy or a girl, and that was the only sonogram they ever had. When you get to be an IVF patient, you are offered a series of early sonograms. The first one, all you see is a little sac. That's all there is, just a little kind of empty space in the uterus. And the sonographer will say, well, it's right here, and you're going like right where? Mm-hmm. And Dr. Fulham will come in and go, oh yeah, that looks really good, and you're like, what? Yeah. But there is a sac there, and it is a very specific size sac. She'll ask you to come back 1 week later, and at that point there'll be a fetal pole there. And my fetal pole is longer than the one that would actually be present in your body. It's 1 to 1.5 millimeters in length. But we can see that on our sonograph machine. And then she'll ask you to come back once more a week to 2 weeks later, and at that point there's going to be a heartbeat in that fetal pole. And that all occurs by the time you're what's called 37 days pregnant. Okay, so it's usually about 2 weeks after the transfer. And at appropriate at those points, there's not much that can be done about it. But at least you know if everything looks good, there's a 95% chance that everything's going to be just fine with the pregnancy. What if there's two sacs in there? It occurs about 17% of the time in IVF. If you transfer 3 to 4 embryos back, there may be multiple gestation. Okay? That's basically what goes on in the course of the IVF cycle. The medications we use, Lupron, I told you it's used as a suppress natural recurring hormones. And it does cause some side effects for some patients. The side effects that it causes are headache in some women, and it'll cause some mood swings. If your wife has PMS already, Lupron does tend to make it seem just a little bit worse. And business trips are well planned at that point. She takes it once a day between 6 and 8 o'clock in the morning, usually, or 9 o'clock if you get up a little later in the morning. And what it's doing is suppressing your own natural occurring hormones. It's keeping your estrogen level really low. And estrogen is the hormone for women that makes them happier. So when we decrease that level a lot, you tend to not be real fun. But it only lasts for the period of time that you're on the Lupron itself. And if it's causing you to have headaches, we do have some medications available to help with that. And one of those is Celdane, which some of you probably already take for allergies. Or elsewhere. Celdane tends to have, it has an antihistamine effect, and it decreases the headache that some women will have from the Lupron. The second medication is the Metrogen. Metrogen has 75 units of follicle stimulating hormone in each ampule, and this tends to cause you to produce a larger number of follicles than you would on your normal individual cycle. because you're taking it longer, in larger doses and for a longer period of time than would happen in your normal cycle. The side effects of metrodone are really very few. It also can cause some mood swings, but this time it causes them because your estrogen level kind of skyrockets up. Instead of going up very gently over 12 or 14 days, it goes up 100, 200, 400, 800, and just increases much more rapidly into a much higher level. The only serious side effect that may occur with metrodone or with Pergonal is ovarian swelling, where you produce a large number of follicles, and your estrogen level gets up into the multiple thousands. It may be as high as 4,000 to 5,000. And if you have a large number of follicles and a high estrogen level, what happens is fluid tends to collect in the pelvic area even after the retrieval has been done, and it causes some pelvic discomfort. It may cause some problems with urination, and it may cause a little bit of fluid shift from your bloodstream to the pelvic area. And for that to happen, occurs in about 1 to 3% of patients. For it to be a serious sequela of taking the medication is about 1% of patients. And we watch very carefully for that, and if it looks like you are getting a high degree of stimulation from the metrodone around the time of the retrieval, we'll probably give you an additional medication called albumin, and we'll give it in the form of an IV. And what it does is it helps to draw the fluid back into the bloodstream and out of the pelvic area so that you won't be quite so uncomfortable. It's a short-lived discomfort, and for most patients it goes away within about 3 to 5 days of the retrieval being done. But some people will experience it. Once you get on the progesterone, there really aren't any side effects of progesterone. It will cause some breast tenderness. It will cause you to experience a couple of symptoms of pregnancy even without being pregnant. And so it's kind of a confounding drug to patients because everybody's looking for that one sign that says, yes, I'm pregnant, or no, I'm not. And most of the signs they call with are related to the progesterone rather than related to the possibility of pregnancy that early on. But so there really aren't any side effects of that one. And as I said, you can take it in either an injectable form or an oral form. A word about your medications. We will provide within your cycle all of the medications you need, the Lupron, Metrodin up to 24 ampules, the HCG, and progesterone as part of your cycle. If you have a prescription card that allows you to get your medications for $5 or $10 for having one filled, you can get prescriptions for those medications from us and get them filled through your own pharmacy. And we will give you back $1,321 off the top of the cycle fee for doing that. So there is a cost benefit if you have an insurance plan that will cover at least the medications for doing that. And feel free to shop around for the cost of medication if you want to as well. If you do receive your metrodone from us, the ends of the boxes will have a number on them, and that's the lot number of medications. We used to be very specific about keeping everybody true to their lot number of medication. If you started out at 8024, we wanted you to always have 8024. But in the recent past, there's been a bit of fluctuation among the lots of medication. And at the current time, we're actually giving you out 30 ampules of metrodone at the start of the cycle. And we're giving them to you from three different lot numbers. And we're asking you to play Chinese restaurant with them and take one from box A and one from box B tonight, and then tomorrow night take one from B and one from C, and mix up the lot numbers of medication you're taking. The reason for doing that is because we don't really have control over exactly the quality of the lot medication. We know what they assay out to be, and they're all well over the 75 that it says on the box, but we want to make sure that everybody has as good a cycle as they possibly can. And the way to do that is to intermingle the lots of medication so that everybody has a great cycle. So you will be asked to bear with us and play a Chinese restaurant when you're taking your metrodin.
If we're buying the medication ourselves, what are we doing?
If you're buying the medication yourselves, your pharmacy is probably only going to be able to provide you with one lot number. Really not. The thing that would happen is that if you had a slower response to medication, you might be on the medication for a day or two longer than you would have if you'd used our medication. Or if you have a great lot of medication, you might be on it a day or two shorter. We don't have any control over that. Does anybody have any questions yet? Is anybody awake? Yes? would like you to do is get up and stretch and go get some water, walk around for a few minutes, and then when you come back, what we're going to do is learn how to mix and inject the medications. And there is a practice shot involved in doing this. What we found is that if you don't do the practice shot here, the first shot at home usually takes about 2 hours if you're doing it together. And the reason for that is there's that first half hour where you're standing there mixing the medication going, she didn't say that. And he's going, yes, she did. That's exactly how they did it. And then there's another half hour where your wife is out walking the neighbor's cat. This is her new habit because she has something else she has to do right now rather than get the shot. And then there's about 15 minutes of you're standing there with the needle going, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it, and you haven't done it yet. Okay? So if we have you do it here, what you find out is that it won't kill you, or you won't kill her, and it's really not that hard to do. It's not that difficult to do the injection. And we make you 5-minute wonders where it took us months to learn how to do this. Okay? We've never had a problem with anybody giving a shot yet, so. Get up, take a stretch, and we'll come back and learn how to mix these medications.